Locked On Heat is a daily podcast covering the Miami Heat. So subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts. And we'll be there every weekday from now until the end of the season. Locked On Heat, the Miami Heat, every day.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg, editor at allyoucanheat.com. With me on the other line, as always, is a man of many bylines. It's David Ramil. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. You know, it's a little less than a week now from training camp, and I think just trying to kill time here until the season starts. But, you know, it's a time of excitement. We're getting past the summer doldrums and looking forward to talking about another season of Heat basketball.
We're going to be talking about the forward position today as we continue along with our week-long series where we're previewing each position. So we kind of did something different with this one because Monday we did point guards, Tuesday was shooting guards, and for today's podcast, we want to just kind of lump all of the forwards in together, not the big men. So like the big men, the Chris Bosh, Son Whiteside, that'll be Thursday. Friday we're going to do a training camp preview, so more of an in-general overview of what we can expect for training camp. But today we're going to talk about Justice Winslow, Derek Williams, James Johnson, and Luke Babbitt. So just kind of lumping all these kind of tweener 3-4 kind of guys together into one show. So we'll get started where we probably should start, Justice Winslow. It looks like he's going to get the starting nod at the small forward position, but he should be playing, we could see him playing some 4, maybe even some 5, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's the position he was used at briefly last season during the Eastern Conference playoffs versus the Toronto Raptors. That series with Hassan Whiteside out of the lineup due to injury. They went with a lineup that I don't think we had seen at any point during the regular season. That's starting Justice Winslow at the center position. And so, you know, obviously he's listed at 6'7". He's probably a little undersized for that position, but he's strong enough to move around on the perimeter and create a little havoc there. And then, you know, as far as being able to keep big men off the glass, that's probably not his strong suit, but I think he is, you know, physically durable enough where he could probably, you know, work there a little bit and you know, provide a little bit of rest if needed. You know, I don't think that's something that we'll see regularly. I think ideally he's probably more of a 3-4 at this point in his career.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously starting at the 3, he's going to have to improve on that jumper, which he might be doing already. From the reports that we're hearing this summer, he's been working with a shooting coach. Everything, all signs are encouraging that he's getting that jump shot better. And I think from everybody that we've talked to, when we did those team previews last week, everybody seems to be really, really high. All the NBA guys that we're talking to outside of Miami, right? Everybody else around the league is really high on Justice Winslow. So that makes, I think, us feel more assured in what we saw from him his rookie year. And I think nobody is really expecting that he won't develop that jumper. Everybody thinks that that's going to come along at some point.
Well, I'll counter that, actually, because it turns out I was just listening to friend of the program, Zach Harper, and his Eye on Basketball podcast over at CBS Sports. And in a recent look ahead to the Eastern Conference and breaking down like the various teams and how they changed during the offseason, one of the things he pointed out, I guess, is a recent news bulletin was, you know, the fact that Justice Winslow has been working on his shot. And he actually said a comment, you know, as he often does during the podcast, kind of off the cuff. And he said he thinks, you know, that this is going to be the first of many seasons where we will hear about him, quote unquote, that is Winslow changing his or working with somebody to change his jump shot. That he thinks it's going to be a progress, you know, something he's going to be progressing on over the course of his career. That's just the way his form is at this point. And unless he finds some kind of stability and consistency with that in the short term, he might just be constantly working and evolving it over the course of his career because he's just not a natural shooter. I guess that's his perspective. Now, you know, take Zach's comments for what they were. I mean, I'm sure he could probably go a lot deeper on them than that, but it is a cause for concern. I mean, we haven't seen anything to indicate that it's going to be a consistent strength in Justice's game. So I guess there is cause for concern, and we'll just have to wait and see whether or not it's paid off during this season.
You know, I tend to feel like I worry too much about those things, but he is just 19 years old. that does matter as far as development is concerned. And I think what
helps, he's 20 now, isn't he? I mean, he's a ripe old age, 20.
That's a good point. Yes, he's 20 now. Came to
he's
league.
He's done. He's washed.
He's old man. You know, I think what serves Winslow really well, though, is that he's already so proficient in a lot of different areas. He's a good rebounder for his position. He defends at a very high level, which we've talked about a lot of times. He's a good passer. You know, I don't think that was necessarily on display, but he showed that at Duke, right? And I think he's going to show that a little bit more this upcoming season when he has the ball in his hands a little bit more. So he's really – and he does a lot of the little things. Like, he's already good at making the hustle plays and getting steals and blocks and things that – those things that Eric Spoelstra raved about his entire rookie season. So because I feel like he's stable enough in a lot of different aspects of the game, he really can just work on that jumper in practices and wherever he can. Like, at least he knows exactly what it is he needs to get better at, and he needs to get better at it if he's going to play small forward and if he's not going to end up as, you know, maybe topping out it as a Tony Allen type. But a Tony Allen, you know, he's very valuable for the Memphis Grizzlies. He's been a big part of a lot of 50-plus win teams. But he's not Kawhi Leonard. He's not Paul George. He's not what a lot of people have projected Justice Winslow to be. And if he's going to be that, he's obviously going to get into that jumper. Are you at all, like, a scale from 1 to 10, how concerned are you that Winslow's jumper is going to be a major problem down the road?
Oh, 10. Yeah, I'm very concerned. I just want to see more consistency. I know a lot of people, he's developed somewhat of a cult following. You go on Heat Twitter for any length of time, and chances are you will see Justice's and Josh Richardson's name spoken of in hollow terms and in 140 characters or less. And I'm not quite on that boat. You know, I know, you know, as many or at least one particular listener likes to point out, I wasn't high on Justice last season. That's kind of mellowed over time. But, you know, that's not the point. I feel like he's developed, you know, pretty consistently as far as, you know, having an impact and other things and not necessarily measurables, you know, and of course his perimeter defense and everything else, his effort, you can't question that. And that's something that you like to see as a fan of his and a fan of the team. But I think the offense needs to be there in order for him to be an effective player. Like, you know, clearly Dwayne Wade wasn't an effective perimeter shooter. He never really was throughout the course of his career, but his mid-range game was so strong. His ability to get to the free throw line was such a major part of his game. And I think his ability to cut off ball and things of that sort, things that we haven't seen from Justice, need to be there. So if he's not going to be a perimeter shooter at any point in his career, as much as I'd love for him to be knocking down three-pointers at a 40% rate, that doesn't seem likely. But if he doesn't do that, then he needs to be able to develop offensively somehow. And we've seen, you know, you can't continue to use his age as an excuse. Not that you are or anybody else is, but I think we've seen some fans kind of point to his age and say, well, you know, he's still young. He's going to develop. Well, Karl-Anthony Towns is young and he's very polished. And Kristaps Porzingis is young and he's already polished, et cetera. You know, so Kevin Durant, when he came out of University of Texas, was the same age as Justice Winslow, and he was a far greater shooter than Justice Winslow is likely to ever be. So I think we can, you know, dismiss the age thing and be legitimately concerned about how he's going to progress offensively.
I agree with you on the age thing. I think we tend to fall back on that and say, well, he's only 20, so he's going to get better in this area, in this area, in this area. That's not necessarily true. We've seen it a million times. I mean, Derek Williams, we're going to talk about him a little bit later, but he's 25. You know, he came in the league the same age as Justice Winslow, and he's never been able to develop an outside jumper. And that was the big knock against him. He was super athletic and had all the intangibles, the tools, and the measurables and everything, but just never developed his outside jumper. But with Winslow, I think the one area that does make me feel better, and while if I were going to answer my own question, scale from 1 to 10, I probably wouldn't be a 10. I'd probably be higher, like a 7 or an 8, you know? Just because there was a stretch towards the end of the season, particularly after the All-Star break, where he was shooting 33% from three-point range, where his average was 27% for the season. So it was even lower than that before the All-Star break. It was only at one attempt per game. But if we're gonna scrap around for positive signs, that's one of them. The other thing that does worry me about Winslow, on the other hand, is that he only shot 68% from the free throw line, and that's not good. And the free throw line is the mark of a very, usually, you know, very good. There's not a lot of good shooters that don't do well at the free throw line, right? Yeah, or absolutely. Vice versa. There's not a lot of bad shooters that do well at the free throw line. That's a really good mark and indication for who is a good shooter. 68% on 1.5 free throws a game. Now, he didn't get to the line all that much, so it's not even that big of a sample size. But that was still the case at Duke still. So,
right.
Just and that kind general,
of,
yeah.
Yeah, sorry. That kind of supports Zach Harper's comments, saying, you know, that he's tweaking his form somewhat, and he's inconsistent. And you've seen that from big men in the past, is they're not comfortable with a jump shot, so that's why they shoot so poorly at the line as well. And then you know, conversely, you see a guy like Ray Allen, who's like a 90% career free throw shooter, and he's such a great three point shooter as well. So, you know, it's all about the form, the consistency, going through it, you know, muscle memory, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's why I particularly have some concerns.
Right. And there are guys that have gotten better. Draymond Green, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, they've all have been very, like, poor shooters, poor jump shooters, who have turned into good jump shooters. So there is that side. And those are the kind of guys that Justice Winslow has been compared to. So we can only hope that he lives up to those expectations. As a small forward this year, though, one of the things that he is going to bring to the Heat starting lineup is, I think, somebody that can... He's going to be the main defender on that team. That's going to be his niche role, is whoever the best offensive player is on the other team, Winslow's probably guarding that player. Even if it's a point guard, I think Winslow could guard that guy down the stretch, maybe for the last couple minutes of a game. And then he's going to have to rebound. He's going to have to, if that jump shot doesn't magically develop in this season, his sophomore season, it's going to be everything else that he has to do really, really well. He needs to rebound the ball. He needs to jump high. He needs to play above the rim at times. He needs to facilitate a little bit more. What do you think his role is going to be?
I think, you know, we've talked about it before, based on what we saw from him in Summer League and what we heard directly from Juwan Howard as the Summer League team's coach, that they want to see Winslow develop into more of a facilitator. And that's also a concern, because just we didn't see that from him during his rookie season. And now, you know, obviously with Goran Dragic in the lineup, Dwayne Wade and others, that wasn't necessarily something that Winslow needed to develop or highlight. So now that they're gone, or rather now that Wade's gone, and you feel more comfortable saying that Winslow's going to be that kind of a playmaker, because he does have, as you've pointed out on a number of occasions, he has a really quick first step. And that's something that we saw out of college, that he was just able to get past that first defender. And that's why, you know, a lack of a jump shot didn't necessarily have an impact on his ability to produce at the collegiate level. So he was able to get past, you know, that first defender and get to the hoop with ease. But that was college, different game, and different speed overall. So you kind of want to see him develop as a playmaker. And I think that's where I'm looking for him to take that major step this season with the Heat. Napa
know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
All right, let's move on. We're going to talk about Derek Williams now, who actually had the South Florida Sun Sentinels' Ira Winderman spoke with Derek Williams about why he decided to sign with the Miami Heat. And Williams talked about, he called it the perfect opportunity. He talked about Dwayne Wade and Luol Deng leaving, feeling like he would have an opportunity to play. Likes the positionless approach that Eric Spoelstra takes to the game. And you could tell he's really looking... And he talked about Luol Deng playing the 3 and the 4, and you could tell he's looking at that maybe as a model of what he can do. And I'm high on Derek Williams, at least for his fit in Miami. I don't think he's going to miraculously turn into the all-star that he was supposed to be as the number 2 overall pick back in, what was it, 2008, I think? 2009?
Yeah.
But 2008. But I do think that if you look at his career between the Minnesota Timberwolves, having to play behind Kevin Love and Michael Beasley, and his stint with the Sacramento Kings and the New York Knicks, these last two seasons, basically playing for 5 different head coaches, that's really tough. So I think the stability that the Heat will provide and the opportunity that he should get coming off the bench, playing a little 3, playing a little 4, I think is going to be a really good fit for him. And I've talked about, when we've talked about Derek Williams in the past, I've mentioned how I think the NBA might be catching up to Derek Williams a little bit, where he might have not worked as a pure three when he came into the league almost 8 years ago. But now I think with the way the league has transitioned to small ball, I think a thicker, bigger-bodied four who is athletic enough like he is, who could play above the rim like he does, that has value. And I think maybe a Marvin Williams is a good barometer, or maybe even a good role model for Derek Williams to say, okay, he developed not even a three-point shot, but just a three-point shot from the corner, which is the most efficient spot to shoot a three from. If he could just develop that and then just do these little things in between, be an average defender, I think that he can have a spot in this league. And I think the Heat are a good spot for him to try to develop that.
Now, I want to go back a little bit because I think you pointed out that he was drafted in 2008, but if I'm looking at it correctly, he was actually chosen in 2011 by the Minnesota Timberwolves. So it's been a five-year stint for him in the league.
Okay.
That sounds right. And then, obviously the Timberwolves behind Love, behind Michael Beasley when he was there. And that was the thing for him that he pointed out in that article to Winderman was, you know, we've talked about it before, but that's instability that he's dealt with over the course of his short career. I mean, 5 years, head coaches, in New York, he was starting to thrive under the Derek Fisher era that was short lived. And then when he was fired midway through the season, Kurt Rambis took over and put him on the bench basically and kept him out of the rotation because he didn't know how to use a player like Williams. And so that was a concern for him. And we've looked at, Miami on a number of occasions as a place where players can go through a rebirth of sorts. You know, there's a history of reclaiming players whose careers have been washed up or maybe never even taken off and kind of thrived here. Part of that was, the work they've done with the D-League recently with guys like Hassan Whiteside and even Briante Weber, Tyler Johnson, and others. But even further back, Pat Riley in his career, when he was with the Knicks, he started John Starks, Anthony Mason, and a whole bunch of other guys that he kind of picked out of the old CBA there and turned them into, really good quality NBA players. So there's a stability there. Obviously, there's a work on an individual level that needs to take place, but that stability does help. And I think it's also a matter of finding the right fit for a guy of their talents. And I think, as you alluded to, maybe he didn't have necessarily a good fit when he was first drafted in Minnesota. They didn't know how to use him at a time before that evolution had taken place towards smaller lineups. But now, at 6'8 and 240, a guy who could play both forward positions, that benefits him, I think. And I think that benefits as far as what we've talked about in our point guard preview regarding the overall style of play and the personnel that they have on this team. It's one that's more adept at playing at a faster pace. And I think his athleticism is something that Heat fans are going to be very surprised of. You can see that from a high draft position where he was chosen fifth overall by Minnesota, there were a lot of expectations that were not met by him. But I think that's unfair because he was drafted into a position, as he alludes to in that article, they were looking for the best overall talent. That's where he fit the bill. But it wasn't necessarily the best fit for him because he was already playing behind established veterans like Beasley and Love. And so he never really got that opportunity to develop and get that necessary experience to continue growing at that point. So I think that's something he'll hopefully find here. I mean, where do you see him as far as like his ceiling going to be? Because, obviously we're looking at him being the starter if Chris Bosh isn't available. But if Bosh is, back in the lineup, as many anticipate that he will be now, Williams is going to be coming off the bench. Is he going to be part of this rotation where he's going to go in for either Winslow or Bosch or maybe together with a guy like, Deion Waiters or Tyler Johnson, part of a faster, potent athletic lineup that can come in off the bench?
Yeah, I think that's exactly where he fits in. My problem with Derek Williams, though, I mean, I'm high on Derek Williams. I'm one of those guys that feels that he never really got the opportunity or the right fit, and he's 25 years old. Right. But he's still young. He's yet to hit his prime, and I think with a good opportunity, he can really turn things around. We've seen it a bunch of times in the NBA. But as far as his ceiling, I think he'll be good as far as coming in, providing some athleticism, maybe, like a bench spark kind of guy. I don't know how much he can actually play alongside Justice Winslow, because if Chris Bosh isn't able to play and Derek Williams gets that starting position, the lack of shooting from him and the lack of shooting from Winslow is going to really, really hurt that team, because now you're looking at a starting unit that is going to be basically without any perimeter shooting. You know, if it's Goran Dragic who's handling the ball, you know, Josh Richardson is going to be the one perimeter shooter. Winslow, Williams, and Whiteside, that's not a lot of shooting. And we saw that the Heat were able to survive last year with that, but they also had, you know, natural scorers like Dwayne Wade and Joe Johnson and even Luol Deng, who did a great job of finding points and finding spaces in the defense. I don't think the Heat are going to have that this year, and so I wonder who Williams plays with, especially if Bosh can't play. The one thing that Williams does do, he shot pretty well from the corners last year, which I've already talked about. I mean, he was 21 of 53 from the corners last season, which I can't do the percentages off my head, but that's a pretty substantial rate. That's
45%.
Okay, great.
45, yeah. I think 21 of 53, because that's right under 50% or so. So yeah.
Right, so it's yeah, 40-something percent, which is very good. If he could do that, then that changes everything for him, because now he's playing like a Marvin Williams type role that I talked about earlier, and maybe he's not the defender that Marvin Williams is, but maybe he could become that, and that's with his athleticism and his ability to grab a rebound and then take off to the other side of the floor. This team is going to get a lot of points that from, you know, getting defensive stops and defensive rebounds and getting the ball down the floor as fast as possible. I think that's where you're going to see a lot of points, not like semi-transition points, you know what I mean? And I think Derek sure. Williams fits that. He can help Eric Spoelstra and the Heat do that.
He wasn't a starter last season with New York either. I thought he had that starting position down, but I guess he was mostly a bench player, came in. Mm-hmm. Did he back up? I didn't watch a lot of Knicks games. I don't think a lot of people did, but I didn't. Did he back up Carmelo, or was he I guess we'll be able to talk to Jared Dubin of Locked on Knicks about it at some point in the future, but was he a backup to Carmelo, or did he play alongside him? I'm not sure how that worked out.
Honestly, I didn't watch a lot of Knicks either. I think okay. He's probably played a lot of back. I think he was played a lot of backup to him and Porzingis and whatever that they were doing, but yeah. Between
we can't really look at New York as an accurate role or model of how to use Derek Williams, because clearly he didn't play well there either. So right. We're gonna have to figure out something new and different here in Miami for him.
And that should be exciting for Spoelstra. But if you look at Winslow, Derek Williams, and James Johnson, let's just talk about all of them really quick. They're all, you know, above average to very good athletic players. You know. That's their bill in the NBA, is the athleticism, but they're not necessarily good shooters. So the Heat have a lot of redundancies at this position, and I think that, and James Johnson is a plus defender. He has been throughout his career. Winslow's obviously a plus defender. Derek Williams is, you know, maybe average, but a lot of these guys are going to be doing the same things. I think with a league that's transitioning to more and more shooting, and perimeter shooter oriented games, it does worry me that there's not a lot of shooting depth at this position for the Heat.
Yeah, I mean, clearly that's a concern. It's hard to see exactly how these guys are gonna, you know, continue to thrive or play well here in Miami, considering there's not enough shooting to supplement what it is that they do. And it's all about creating a balance. You want to be able to have, if they're going to be cutting to the rim and using their athleticism, and that's, you know, something that we anticipate them being able to do, you want to at least be able to complement that with the threat of perimeter shooting, having somebody there to have that kind of gravity and pull a defender away so they don't clog the paint, or else you're just going to wind up having a mishmash of players that just don't fit well and have duplicative skill sets. So that's a major concern, I think, for Miami. Now, you know, obviously Josh Richardson might help with that a little bit. Tyler Johnson might help with that a little bit. Hopefully Deion Waiters can be a little bit more consistent as far as his shooting from the perimeter. We didn't get to see that from Goran Dragic last year, and you wonder how much he's going to be able to take that three-point shot, or whether or not he feels more comfortable just driving to the rim and kicking it out to somebody on the perimeter. But you need to be able to knock those shots, or at least threaten to do so. And that's going to make the team flow more consistently, you know. And I don't think they're strong enough defensively, where like you look at a team like Orlando, where they're banking on their defense being the strength of their overall approach, so that even though they have a lack of scoring, or likely to have a lack of scoring, they'll probably still be able to defend teams pretty tightly and keep games close in that sense. I don't think Miami's that strong defensively, particularly with a guy like Dragic. You know, he's not necessarily known for his strong perimeter defense. So I think that's an issue for Miami as well.
The one common thread that they also have, though, is that these are all natural threes who could play the four. And for the Heat to, I think the Heat to answer this question about shooting. This is why Chris Bosh, by the way, is going to be really important for this team. He's such a good three-point shooter and such a threat from the perimeter. Even, you know, passing and just the whole triple threat thing that he brings.
Yeah.
If he's in that lineup, you can afford to have a non-shooter at even the small forward position, because you do have a guy maybe like Josh Richardson and a good scorer like Goran Dragic and interior presence like Hassan Whiteside, that Bosch's presence really helps space the floor. But if Bosch can't play, I think you're going to see a lot of these guys slide down and play the four, and then that way you're able to add two of the shooting guards into the mix. Maybe you do a Tyler Johnson and Deion Waiters, Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson, Waiters, and Richardson. You can combine those guys. Richardson and Waiters could both play the three in little bits. So, you know, their versatility, I think, is going to be really important. Let's talk really quick about Luke Babbitt before we wrap up here.
Speaking of versatility, right?
Right, exactly. this is the poster boy for versatility. Basically a three-point shooter.
And that's about it.
Yeah. So,
you know, I think there's a lack of athleticism there. I think that's a knock on him. I think, you know, he's sized about right to be able to play either small forward or power forward position, but he just lacks the kind of overall athleticism. So that's a concern. But he has become a pretty, you know, solid shooter in limited appearances, although he did have a stretch towards the end of last season when the Pelicans roster was so decimated by injuries, where Alvin Gentry, their head coach, had no choice but to play Babbitt for long stretches, and he capitalized on those. And you know, he was able to knock down some shots along the perimeter. And he's been there for you know, off-season workouts in Miami, and hopefully he's getting a little bit, you know, more work and developing a little bit, and he'll have an opportunity to play. You know, I think we've, you know, heard some questions from our listeners as to whether or not he even sticks around on the roster. I mean, I think you and I are both optimistic that he will. Is that still the case with you?
Yeah, I think he will. You know, just the veteran presence. I don't really know who, you know, we're not going to talk about Carroll White. We'll talk about him when we do the training camp preview, but he doesn't have a shot at making the roster. Stefan Jankovic, another guy we'll get to, not going to make the roster. I just think Babbitt, this team tends to favor veterans. I think he's going to be a break in case of emergency type player. He's going to be the 14th or 15th guy maybe on that roster. But if the Heat are down 10, 12, 14 points at any given time, they're like, well, hell, we need to get some three-pointers to sink really quick. Maybe that's when you bring in a Luke Babbitt and play super small with him at the four. I don't know. That to me is going to be his role. But all right, we're going to wrap this up. That's all we have for today, and whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. You can get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, inquire about advertising, or just say hi. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. That's all we got. Thanks for joining me, David.
Take care, Willis.
Catch you next time.
Napa Know How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people, that's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how!
At participating Napa auto parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.